Sharp and Jay Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. That's why I see
you, man. Glad you're with us. ESPN 1000, Captain Jay Hood off today. Jesse Rogers, Brian Hanley here, and the guys are not here, but you know, shot or no shot is always a staple of the morning show. And it's brought to us by Charlie Bevins.
Club Hawthorne. Put a little more action into your weekend at one of Club Hawthorne's 16 newly remodeled betting bars. Or bet the races from home or on the go. Oh, good morning, Secretariat. With the Club Hawthorne mobile wagering app and register at Club Hawthorne now for a chance at $12,000 cash on January 1st.
Say hello to Jim Miller out there, the man, and, of course, Tom Carey and everyone in Dakota, everyone at Hawthorne, great people as always. And time for shot or no shot. What do we have today, Charlie?
All right. Well, tomorrow the Bears go from playing the best team in the NFC in the Philadelphia Eagles to likely the best team in the AFC in the Buffalo Bills. They did, however, keep it close last week and looked like a functional football team against one of the league's best, even giving the Eagles a scare in the game. The Bills are 8.5-point favorites, but shot or no shot, this is a trap game for Buffalo.
Who they get next? Who they have next week? You have the schedule. I mean, by a trap game, they're usually looking ahead from a team that's 3-11 in the Chicago Bears, and as you alluded to, 11-3 Buffalo Bills.
They have a Monday night game against Cincinnati next week.
All right, national TV. I no shot. And I see a lot of the predictions in the Sun-Times and Tribune and all the guys who and women who cover the Chicago Bears and do a great job doing so. And I see most of them, the majority of them, have this a touchdown game or even closer. They might hang in there for a while because they've been doing that the last 4 or 5 weeks. But I think this Buffalo Bills team is the goods, and I think they're just way too good, and both sides of the ball, and they can put up points and as many as they need. I think they cover, and they probably end up winning by 13, 14 points.
I learned my lesson last week, so I'm going to say shot that it is a bit of a trap game. Couple things. First of all, the Eagles, as great as they were going into that game, were 2-4 on the road against the spread, now 2-5. As great as Philly is, on the road, not so great. I think Buffalo has sort of underachieved. I can't get to the internet to look at their point spread, you know, results, but because my net's been down. But I don't think they're as good covering as you might think for being a really good team. So big spread on the road. And you have to say, you'd have to think the weather is a mitigating circumstance here. In other words, it's going to insert itself into the game that's equal to both teams and kind of bring both teams down near the same level a little bit, like almost like what happened last week. I think the Bills win, but it's closer than 9 points. What'd you say, 8.5 points?
So we know that the Bears can run, and they're the best running team in the NFC. And with Khalil Herbert back,
big return there.
Yeah, big return.
Don't dismiss that.
No. But last week the Eagles, I thought it was a shot to cover because that was a trap game for the Eagles. One, it was on the road, and two, they were looking forward to Dallas, which is a true rivalry for them.
Well, we've got the same thing here. I mean, Buffalo on the road and looking forward to Cincinnati.
Yeah, Cincinnati.
Monday night.
Okay. All right. I'll still say no shot.
Okay.
All right. It's no secret the Bears have a struggling offensive line, but one of the bright spots has been Braxton Jones. Jones is a functional left tackle they got in the fifth round, and in the fifth round, that's really all you can ask for out of a tackle. Shot or no shot, Braxton Jones eliminates the need for finding a left tackle right away this offseason.
Well, if anybody's listening to this radio station when I've been on these last 3-4 months, shot at that. I've loved this kid since about the third game of the preseason, and I don't think he's done anything to think that, oh, God, we got to go out and get a left tackle. And I'll add one more reason to it, Brian. It's because he's not done getting better. I've been on with him a couple times. He's been on with me a couple times on this state. You could tell this guy loves to learn, loves to play, loves to get better. If this is the worst he is, we've got a good few years with Braxton Jones at left tackle.
No shot. And I remember that interview you did with him, and I was in my car after being on the air here. A terrific kid. I'm not knocking anything he's done.
Sure.
I mean, he was drafted where he's drafted. He's done yeoman's work. He's done his, you know, hopefully he hasn't done as well as he could. There is another level or two. But look, when you're Ryan Poles and you're sitting on $115 or $120 million worth of cap space, and, you know, I'd have to go look to see what available free agent left tackles are out there, and it's going to cost you, you know, a ton of money. But you have the money, and you I would think you have the franchise quarterback. You can upgrade there, and you need to upgrade there. And that, I mean, it's I'm not blaming him for anything necessarily.
I get it.
But, you know, it would be a great story. I mean, if Ryan Poles really is going to say they found their guy, all right, well, then I'm going to trust in Ryan Poles. But I think because of the assets and the money you have to spend, you can do better. And I think you have to do everything you can in this offseason. And it's not just a one-off season thing. You have a lot of heavy lifting to do, but you've got to start both sides of the ball, both the offensive and defensive line. So,
well, let me say this: if I was going to take that side of the argument, you just made it for me. That was a good, well thought out argument. I can understand every point you just made there. I just think that this will be the guy. But it very well said. I can understand where you're coming from.
All right, the New York Jets last night lost to the Jacksonville Jaguars, and it appears the final nail has been put in the coffin that is Zach Wilson's career. He was benched for something called Chris Streveler.
Wow.
Other notable draftees from the 2021 class include Jamar Chase, Kyle Pitts, Micah Parsons, Jalen Waddle, Justin Fields, Devontae Smith, Rashawn Slater. You get the point. It's a long list of franchise-altering players that the Jets do not have because they drafted Wilson. Shot or no shot, Zach Wilson is a bigger bust than even our good friend Mitchell Trubisky.
Well, I mean, look, I would say shot. He'll get another chance, you know, whether he goes the Mitch Trubisky route and ends up being a backup somewhere like Mitch did in Buffalo for a year. But you Google Zach Wilson today, and he's trending, right? Here are the headlines. ESPN, Jets' Zach Wilson pulled as Chris Streveler gives quote-unquote spark. The New York Post, Zach Wilson looks done with the Jets after latest disaster. Yahoo, after Jets' bad loss to the Jaguars, Zach Wilson's starting to look like a lost cause. You get the idea. He at least did the right thing in the post game after being benched, that he said the right things. I'm not good enough. The offense isn't good enough. We're not scoring. The fans should boo us. Things he didn't say the first go around when he was benched. But the fact is, you've been benched twice. You look at that 2021 draft, Jess, and a month or so ago, our buddy Joe Fortenbaugh tweeted out, is Trevor Lawrence just bad? Could it be that? Yeah. And now 5 weeks later,
they didn't age well.
Yeah, right. I mean, he has been, I think he's got 14, 15 touchdowns and one interception in that span. And they're now knocking on the door of a playoff spot. So when you start making determinations in that 2021 draft, the Bears still have to feel really good about Justin Fields compared to what's going out in San Francisco to be determined, and certainly what's going on with the Jets.
I forgot what the question was. Is he as bad as Trubisky?
Is he a bigger bust than Trubisky?
Yeah. The answer is yes, and I'll tell you why also. Trubisky had moments of success. I can't remember any for Zach Wilson. But more to the point, you have clear evidence in both situations, meaning this. When Trubisky went out and Foles took over, he was just as bad, if not worse. So this was bigger than a Trubisky issue. When Zach Wilson went out, Mike White took over, that offense looked like Air Coryell.
Yep.
I mean, they were great for 2-3 games, and then Mike White got hurt, and they're back to being bad again. So the evidence is clear. He's worse than you thought, and the fact that he was taken, two, right, is just mind-boggling. It's not Ryan Leaf territory, but you never know.
No, he was just a bad guy.
Right. But you get what I'm saying, the fact that I even have to bring that up. So,
well, you brought up Nick Foles, and just remember, you know, what Ryan Pace used to pay backup quarterbacks or even a starting quarterback in Mike Glennon, $16 million, whatever he was making that 1 year, and then he was benched four games in. And Nick Foles, $10 million here, there's $8 million for this guy. I mean, what a disaster. Not only what he was doing with the drafting Trubisky, but then paying these other guys ridiculous sums of money not to do anything.
Did Trubisky make the Pro Bowl like that first season or second?
As an alternate,
second year. When
so anyway, there's a moment of success, right? We weren't completely doubting him after 1 year, where Zach Wilson's had no success.
I think three guys begged out of the game, and they finally got to Trubisky. Yeah,
I get it, but you know what I mean.
Yep. I hear you. So shot or no shot is at the end of shot or no shot, Charlie.
Yes, we got to go to break, but we can do one more question on the side if you want, a little Christmas stuff.
And we'll take your calls, 312-332-3776. Lines are open. You want to jump on in on this chilly morning in Chicago? You got Jesse Rogers, Brian Hanley sitting in for Cap'n Jay Hood, ESPN 1000.
Cap'n Jay Hood mornings on ESPN 1000. Chicago's home for sports. Cap and Jay Hood. Mornings.
ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app.
We're back here on ESPN 1000. So glad you're with us on this cold morning. A lot of people outside. I see a young man there with running shoes and no gloves. So God bless him. He's much tougher than I am. Jesse Rogers and Brian Hanley here for Cap and Jay Hood. Shot or No Shot is brought to us by Charlie Bevins.
It's brought to us by Club Hawthorne once again. I think the last one, this is something that's been on my mind since last year, all right? This happened to me.
Wow. I ordered. It's been marinating for a while.
Yeah, so I ordered my dad a Christmas present, and it was supposed to arrive before Christmas. And, of course, it arrived, like, in January, I'm pretty sure. I'm curious what you guys think, shot or no shot. You're better off going to the mall and fighting the crowds. You're better off going to a mall for Christmas presents than ordering online.
What do you think, Jess?
I'm going to go shot. I don't trust Bezos. I don't trust his operation there, even though they seem to be down my street 24/7.
Yeah, I was going to say, you can see three Amazon trucks on your street within 5 minutes.
Right. I mean, on a Sunday. I would say shot. Go to the store. First of all, I actually like to spend my money at a store instead of online as much as I can. So I would say do that to ensure yourself of having it in your hands for Christmas instead of, hey, honey, here, January 7th, here's your gift. So I would say shot, yes.
Yeah, depending who you're buying for. I mean, if it's your wife or your spouse, I mean, you better not come up empty-handed. And then here's the order number. You can follow it online, track it. I mean, that ain't going to fly, right?
Right.
But, hey, look, in this town, you head out to Nordstrom's, you might see Lou Piniella taking a shirt off and actually trying on a shirt. Remember, he actually like stood in the aisle, didn't go into the dressing room. He needed a dress shirt.
He's Lou Piniella.
Yeah, I'm unfamiliar with this story.
Oh, yeah. I know because Doug Buffon's wife worked there. She told him that Lou Piniella came in. I guess he was in a hurry, and he literally took his shirt off the rack and took his shirt off and put this on. No, this doesn't fit. Let me get something else. I mean, you can't unsee that. You can't. But if you're out there shopping, you might see that. So then you got a story to tell.
So, yes, we both agree. Go to the store, spend it there, and you'll have it in hand for Christmas.
Yes.
Especially if you're trying to buy one today. You ain't getting it by Sunday, Saturday.
And if you're out there, I'm a large if you want. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I was going to make a joke about extra large, but you're not quite.
No. The pandemic, I dropped 23, 24 pounds.
Yeah. Yeah. I need to do the same after this. I was talking to my wife last night. I'm like, what can we do holiday related on the air? And she's like, do your favorite, ask them their favorite holiday dessert, because all you're doing right now is eating desserts. Because you know what they are currently? These triple dipped in chocolate, like chocolate almond malt thingies. I don't know what she actually calls them.
Chocolate?
But they're
almond malt thingies.
Yeah, that's what I call them. But it's basically almonds. Dipped in chocolate, but like triple dipped in. Just unbelievable.
You're like double wouldn't have been enough. You need to go
right,
to that third dip.
Right, yeah. Exactly. So I've been hoofing those down, and that's all we have in this house right now, desserts, it feels like. So the diet starts January 2nd,
well,
right?
You know, at the beginning of the pandemic, we all had a lot of time on our hands and wanted to get out, so I started walking, right? I mean, I used to run, and back in the day when I was Charlie's age, you know, you could close a bar at 4 a.m. and at 8 o'clock in the morning, I could go run 6 miles.
Sure, of course.
And not feel any different, right? And then my doctor's like, why are you still running? You know, walking is just as good if you do it at a good pace. So I started walking 3 miles, 4 miles, up to like 5-6 miles a day. And as I started, and I wasn't like fat, but I was pushing 200. I'm 6'2". But then you start thinking about what you're eating. I mean, I can't remember the last time I had French fries. And I used to love onion rings. And, you know, here in Chicago, every other block, there's a great hot dog stand, right? And I would probably eat at those places 3-4 times a week.
On your walk sometimes.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, it kind of freaked the whole thing. But, I mean, so now it's like I'm much more cognizant, like cap and soda. I'm just much more cognizant of what I'm eating. And you'd be amazed at how much of it you don't miss once you've just pretty much cut it out of your diet.
No, I agree. I mean, and I'm one of those guys that goes through phases. So I'll cut it out for like 3 weeks, 6 weeks, and I feel good about it. And then I get back. You know, it's one of those guys that's on a roller coaster, but many, many people are. But, Yeah, just don't overindulge during the holidays. I'm starting to learn that when it comes to these chocolate malty almond thingies.
And sitting at home, it's even easier to do, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And right. The colder it is outside, the more I eat inside. I don't think I'm alone in that regard. So come January 2nd, like everyone else, I'll be at the gym or whatever, pushing the plate away.
I will say I've had red wine kind of hooked up like an IV on me every night.
Good for your heart.
Yeah. Well, I mean, again,
that's a trick, right? Isn't that what they say?
Well, I used, back in the day, gin, scotch, all the food groups, right?
Well, if you wait long enough, it'll come back, right? They say coffee was bad for you, now it's good for you. Red wine, bad for you, good for you. I don't know where they stand now. I can't wait till they tell me caffeine-free Diet Coke is good for me, because then I'll live to 110. Oh, yeah. Right now, if it's bad for me, I'm in big trouble.
Yeah, back when I was covering beats, and you know it, I mean, I don't know how many cans of Diet Coke I'd go through in a game, right? I mean, you always had one within arm's reach.
Yes.
And you know, a little bit's good. A lot of it, not so good for
you. That's kind of my non-alcoholic vice, is caffeine-free Diet Coke. At least I'm not loading up on caffeine, because I don't want to be hopped up all day and night, right? But caffeine-free Diet Coke, we have a bottle in the house 24/7, and I tend to like that.
Isn't that the joke about baseball writers? Like, you guys are all just slurping down Diet Coke the whole time when you're at games?
Yeah, pretty much.
After the game, you're slurping down a lot more than Diet Coke.
Yeah, so that, you drink the Diet Coke to stay awake to write, and then after the game, you drink the vodka to go to sleep.
And I was telling you guys the story before the show. Doing the morning show, we had a guy who did a baseball hit, and we're talking about the Bears hit. We go down South Beach, and we find it difficult to win down there because of the weather or because it was South Beach. And the guy was supposed to be on the air, and he came on the air, but I swear he was still drunk from the night before. And within like 20 seconds, the words were being slurred, and I'm like waving at my producer like, get him. You know, we can't do this. It's not going to serve him well or us well. He had been out, to the Clevelander or wherever for way too long, and probably was just showing up at his room. But
for sure.
I mean, back in the day, we were talking about Buffalo. Buffalo was so boring during the Stanley Cup Finals that we had an off day. A bunch of us got in the car and drove to Toronto, which was 2 hours away.
I thought you were going to say at least Niagara Falls.
Oh no, Casey Johnson and I went to Niagara Falls once. I mean, it wasn't exactly a honeymoon, but I mean, that was what do you want to do? Let's go to Niagara Falls. Which, by the way, we were on the American side. That truly was breathtaking. I mean, you go down these series of like outdoor decks, right?
And, yep.
And you got your little poncho on, everything else. But you are so close to the falls and the water. It's breathtaking. I mean, you just feel the pressure of the falls. It was something to see.
Speaking of covering hockey, you and I did it at different times, and there was this one stat. I know you're probably aware of it. There was one stat. Teams that went into Vancouver with two nights before the game, not just one night, but two nights before the game, those teams over a course of whatever year was like, I think it was 1-127. It was some insane stat that visiting teams with two nights.
Great city. Great city.
That was my favorite. Vancouver was my favorite on the road.
Covering the Blackhawks, they were playing, they're actually in the playoffs, and it was really nice weather. So Daryl Sutter had his press conference around the hotel pool. And I think it was the same trip. Staying at the hotel was Page and Plant, because they were doing a concert in the arena where the Hawks were going to play the matinee the next day, right? So the then traveling secretary was a kid who happened to be the son-in-law of Bob Pulford. Don't know how he got that job. It must have been a tough interview process. But God bless Phil. He went up to the limo driver who was taking Page and Plant to the concert that night, told him to come back and get us. He took the team credit card out, got tickets to the concert, took us to the tiki bar in the hotel. We bar hopped before and after the concert, and they stopped selling beer like now half hour into the show, and everyone around me is just getting high. They're smoking. And the next day I get up and go to the mat and get there a few hours before the game, and there's still this haze of pot smoke hanging in the rafters.
Vancouver,
I mean, what a great city. And
it's the only town where I did not like stay at a points place like Marriott or Hyatt. I stayed at a place called, anybody that goes up there, the Opus Inn. To this day I remember, it's been a decade. The Opus Inn, it's kind of more in a neighborhood than the downtown with the big buildings and stuff. and there's just everything around. In fact, the Opus Inn at night turned into like a nightclub in the lobby. And if you stayed at the hotel, you got in the nightclub, no problem, because it was a line. I'm okay. I'm in for the nightclub. This is fun. But Vancouver is a wonderful city. Wonderful city.
We were there with the Blackhawks again, and they stayed at the Pan Pacific. And because it was like the G8 or one of these, you know, nations all meeting in, you know, the Pan Pacific or whatever. So they were all there, and the Sultan of Brunei was staying in the hotel. And, I mean, there was a security perimeter like 2 to 3 blocks around the hotel. Like Chris Chelios, we all had to have security passes around our neck. And he had written something on his because he wanted to remember something. And they pulled him aside and, like, berated him for defacing the security. And he had to go through metal detectors. And if the Sultan Brunei was coming through the lobby, everyone had to freeze. There was I opened up the curtains in my room when I checked in. And there's a machine gun nest with two guys in fatigues. Because Clinton was staying across the street at the Hotel Vancouver, or whatever, and these guys are knocking on the window asking me what the score of the Michigan Ohio State football game was. I mean, it was bizarre, but
yeah, it's great, and you know, Stanley Park is a gorgeous park there, and everybody loves that. I you mentioned pot. I feel like they were selling pot openly, like at a storefront before anybody. I'm talking a decade ago, before anybody. So that was a reminder. And it truly is an international city. If you kind of like that, it's you got everybody from all parts of the world there. And I was there were you there for playoffs?
Oh yeah.
I mean, I was there in the heyday, Blackhawks, Canucks.
Yeah.
This is like, you know, 10, 11, 12 when they, oh my God, was it fun.
And I'll tell you,
the whole city was into it, as you'd imagine.
The when Eddie O was on the Rangers and they won the Stanley Cup, Rangers, Canucks. And traveling back and forth cross continent made a lot of miles on that, but I mean, two great cities, New York and Vancouver. You talk about a great Stanley Cup series on top of it. Hey, when we come back, speaking of beats, get back to sports here because I have a question. You've been doing this forever, and I had done it forever. I want to ask you something about this city. Are we getting soft? And I'll tell you why when we come back, or I'll ask you why. Because obviously the Bulls have gotten better these last couple games, thankfully. But some things going on off the court got me to thinking about front offices and where are we at with the guys who actually run the team. We'll do that on ESPN 1000 when we come back.
Cap and Jay Hood mornings on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports. You don't have to wait till you're in your car to hear what Cap and Jay Hood are talking about. Just tell your smart speaker to play ESPN 1000.
Got Cap and Jay Hood. It's Jesse Rogers and Brian Hanley filling in for the guys. Glad you're with us on this chilly morning in Chicago. So, Jesse, thankfully, the Bulls figured out a way to beat the Atlanta Hawks at the buzzer because the Hawks had done that to them previously, and they went down to Miami and the Heat missing a couple guys, but who cares? The Bulls were desperate for a win after that debacle in Minnesota last Sunday where they gave up 150 points and what was it, a franchise worst 82 points in the first half. And after that Sunday game when it was rock bottom for the Bulls to this point in the season, and it's been a season. Joe Colley wrote a column about Zach LaVine, and you and I are in agreement that, you know, Zach isn't worth max money, but he got it here, and, you know, what are the responsibilities that go along with being the face of the franchise and everything. And Joe basically said there are 215 million reasons why Zach has to, you know, get this thing going in the right direction, even if that's not necessarily his personality, according to some people who cover the team. But I started to think, because Joe wrote a column also about the accountability of the front office. And we found out that Billy Donovan was extended, got a contract extension before the season, but it wasn't announced. It was just done quietly. And when you're having the type of season that the Bulls are having before these last two wins, everything's on the table. Is it the roster construction? You know, as people say, DeRozan and Zach LaVine can't live together happily and productively. And so they doubled down on continuity. They doubled down on Billy Donovan. But there are legitimate questions. Everything should have been on the table at that point. And you've covered beats forever and different guys and women and front office people. But it used to be, say what you want about the likes of John Paxson or whomever, they were always at practice as a GM. Bob Pulford, whatever, if he ever wanted to win a Stanley Cup or not, he was around. I mean, you didn't need to go through hoops and request and try to knock on his door to get an interview. You walked in, or you saw him, around the rink or whatever. Larry Himes is much of a pain in the rear he could have been. He was around, up and down. You were able to talk to the decision makers, and there's certain points of every season. Unfortunately, in Chicago, we've lived through too many of them. When they are at rock bottom, it's as a beat guy when it's time to skip going to the coach for the fifth time in the week and getting the same answers and go above his pay grade to the guy who's in charge, right?
Yeah, of course, yeah.
And usually in this city, those people were available to defend or to agree that, things are bad and they're going to change or whatever. And it struck me, Joe asked for AK or Mark Eversley send in an interview request, because now you have to go through people instead of just signing up to them at a practice. When did the city become so soft that the likes of Ryan Pace, who I called the cowardly Ryan, he would hide up in his luxury suite at Soldier Field. He would do his pregame hit on the flagship station, where you're not going to ask tough questions, and it's no knock on Jeff Joniak, because that's just the deal, right? You're an employee. You have to play ball with them. But when did it become okay in this sports city? It wouldn't fly in New York or Philadelphia, where you now have AK Mark Eversley. I think I heard him talk once. He's the GM of the Bulls. Mm-hmm. And everyone was patting him on the back last year. What a great job, the front office. And they finally got people who know what they're doing there. And now not so much. But Joe's like, hey, someone's got to account for what's going on with the Bulls here beyond Lonzo Ball's injury. I mean, it's beyond me that whether it's the Bears, the Bulls, I guess Kyle Davidson is taking a different approach and he's approachable and available. But you see with Tom Ricketts up on the north side, he used to be there every day, sleeves rolled up, signing autographs for fans, and you could go up and talk to him. And now it's like you get within 20 feet of him, he's sending some media relations person, which is an oxymoron.
I'm letting you roll.
Also, when times are good, Tom's there, and all of a sudden, when they're losing money in biblical proportions, he doesn't want to be asked about it. When did this become okay for people to hide and not, when the product's no damn good, to make sure that no one, Jerry Reinsdorf at the winter meetings,
he's
down there to accept the award for the charity work the Sox did, and God bless him, it's terrific work. But you were told you can't ask him baseball questions.
Right.
Okay.
And as a baseball reporter, I put in multiple requests for Jerry over the years and have been turned down. And this is a guy that I've known for 30 years, Jerry Reinsdorf. There's something to it. Here's the question as I listen to you is it unique to Chicago? It's funny you bring this up, because I asked John Greenberg from The Athletic two nights ago on these airwaves, what is it about our city that we stink so much, at least right now?
Right.
Do we bring it upon ourselves? It was kind of the same question. Do other cities put more pressure on their people in charge to make changes on the field and stuff? You're asking a different kind of question. Do other cities just even put the questions to these people in charge and get answers? So it's all kind of jumbled in there. But so I wonder if it's unique to Chicago or something compared to New York. Because one thing I do know is it has changed over the years, where they on their own don't feel it's necessary to answer to the public via the media. I mean, certainly the NFL as a whole and the Bears don't, it's much like you probably could have gotten a hold of Mike Ditka whenever you wanted back in the day. You can't do that anymore. Certainly under John McDonough, the Blackhawks, you couldn't get a hold of anybody at the highest levels. Baseball is still good when it comes to executives. I can call or text Rick Kahn or Jed Hoyer today and get a response to a one-on-one interview. That's still good. I joke about the baseball still kind of the wild, wild west in that regard.
Sure.
If you have a phone number, you can do it. The other sports, even if you have a number, you might get pushed back by PR.
If you use that number, the so-called media relations people will be screaming at you like, you didn't go through protocol or whatever.
Right. So the Bulls, the Bears are in that. Certainly at the ownership level, they are not required to face the music. It's not just addressing it, it's face the music when times are tough, like they have been with the Bulls. The great ones will do that, as you mentioned a few of them. So I don't know if it's us as a media market or just how things have gone and we've allowed it to happen. I guess you could say that about us as a media market. We've allowed it to happen, but I feel like a lot of cities have allowed it to happen.
And I'd like to hear from fans if it bothers you that you don't hear from them. Does it even register? If you're a Bulls fan and you're watching
yes,
this, it's like,
that's a good example because that's the most recent and important example.
Yeah,
right
and God bless Billy Donovan. He's talking about connectivity and want to and all this stuff. I mean, but it sounds like a record with a scratch on it. After every loss, it's the same stuff. At some point, you want to know, the Lakers are supposedly sniffing around the Bulls roster and think about what they would give up for DeMar DeRozan and Vooch. Okay, great. But at some point, the people who put the thing together need to be held accountable and tell me how it's going to change, right? I'll go back, and this goes back decades, but covering the Cubs, and Jim LaFever was manager, and, their fifth place, whatever it was. We were on our last road trip, and we were in San Diego. And Billy Connors, the pitching coach, who, used to room with Seika, so there was that. he was sitting in a folding chair outside the clubhouse, and I'm waiting to get in there or whatever. And he just starts going, oh, boy, you guys are soft. I'm like, what? He goes, the media in this town is soft. I'm like, what are you talking about? He goes, well, you're quick to go after the coaches. You're quick to go after the GM or whatever. You give the players a pass all the time. Never seen anything written critical about the players. Now, I didn't agree with that necessarily, but he was sold on it. And he said in New York, never would fly. Players would get ripped, rightfully so. He went on and on. I'm thinking, okay, because we weren't Philadelphia, we weren't New York. We were trying to one-up each other and get the knives out anytime you could. But I mean, back then he thought we were soft on the players, and now I'm really thinking we allow the decision makers and the owners to run it the way they want. And look, the teams now control their own message, and with their websites, and they have their own video productions and their own talk shows,
Their own TV networks,
absolutely. And look, NBC Sports Chicago is owned by the teams in town and all that.
Marquee.
I get the politics of that stuff, and Marquee had the issue with the sports writer show where they were supposedly told not to be so critical. My point is that when is it acceptable that these people aren't front and center when things, unfortunately, too often, more often than not in this town, aren't going the right way, and you have some questions to ask, and like, how's it going to get better? And you can't ask those questions because they simply don't want to talk to you.
I also think you mentioned like contract extensions and stuff. We know every single dime a player makes and his contract length. I think it's insulting that to a player that we know all that, but we don't know how long Billy Donovan has a contract. The paying fan doesn't know these things. I think that's something that you either know everything about him or nothing. Fine. You don't want to give out terms on players. Okay, fine. Players shouldn't have to be held up to that spotlight without GMs and managers and coaches as well. I think that's unfair that they get to do things like contract extensions and no terms discussed while players don't. Players have to give out every dime they make and have to hear about it like Jason Hayward did for 8 years. What's good for a player should be good for a coach and good for management. I agree. This is the moment when Billy Donovan and these guys should face the music. I was watching SportsCenter this morning, and they were talking about Zach Wilson.
Yep.
And the anchor, I forget who it was, had a good line. Because Zach Wilson did say the right things finally post-game, right? But the line he wanted, he's got all the answers post-game. He has none of them during the game. And that is Billy Donovan right now. Perfect answers post-game, right? We can't argue. He said the right things. He has those answers. He doesn't have many of them in-game. Though, in my opinion, okay, they've played well these last 2 days, and tonight's a big one, revenge game against the Knicks. They've played well these last two games, but is it because of anything Billy Donovan did, or is it because of that locker room scuffle going public? The best thing to happen to Billy Donovan, I think, is that thing went public, and they got embarrassed publicly by infighting, and they played well on the defensive end these last 2 days. I think Billy Donovan has gotten a complete, utter pass in this town for anything he's done since Lonzo Ball went down. And by the way, the Bulls aren't the only team to have a star player go down.
Nope.
He had a whole entire training camp to fix it, to find some answers, and he didn't do it. What has Billy Donovan done at the professional ranks? He had one good playoff run. I think it was his rookie season in Oklahoma City with about seven stars on that team. What has Billy Donovan done? And where can you measure a coach the most? Through adversity, and he's done nothing through this adversity except give up the most points in franchise history after two terrible home losses to the Knicks. I don't even think he's done much these last two games, to be honest. I think they got so embarrassed publicly that they finally responded. Let's see what they do if they can keep this up.
You've heard our thoughts. We want to hear yours. 312-332-3776 is the number. Get to the phone lines when we come back on ESPN 1000.
Cap and Jay Hood. Mornings on ESPN 1000. Chicago's home for sports.
David Kaplan.
Jonathan Hood.
This is Cap and Jay Hood. Follow on Twitter at Cap Jay Hood.
On ESPN 1000.
And the ESPN Chicago app.
Cap and Jay Hood off today. You got Jesse Rogers, the president of the Billy Donovan Fan Club, and Hanley here until 10 a.m.
They better win tonight.
Right? You need to string wins together, and
you need to show the Knicks that what they did to you on your home court
unacceptable.
Is unacceptable. Yeah. And you've played two good games in a row, defensively especially. The Knicks, did they play last night? No, they played a couple nights ago and broke their losing streak, I believe, right? Yes. Broke their winning streak, which is, you've covered things long enough. A lot of times when you break a losing streak or a winning streak, it goes the other way, at least for a little bit. So to me, now that they've lost a game, the air's come out of their balloon a little bit. I think they're ripe for another one. And this is the time to do it on the national stage, so to speak, at Madison Square Garden. So we will see. I'm flying blind for people just tuning in, which means I have no internet here. It's tough, Brian. Three kids, my wife, no internet. Cold day, we're stuck inside. It's
AT&T tough. Hasn't helped you, yeah.
No help at all. If DirecTV goes down, it's like the TV, we're done. It's over. We got to stare at each other. Can't do that.
312-332-3776.
Play Monopoly all day.
7-6, board games. And boy, holidays, I've got relatives. That's all they do. Jigsaw puzzles and board games. And
bored or boring games?
Well, it depends your perspective.
B-O-R-E-D.
Yeah. Matt is in Streamwood, has a Bulls question. Hey, Matt, what's up?
Hey, Hanley, Jesse, thank you for taking my phone call, and I hope you guys have a great holiday. May I ask you, Jesse, two nights ago you had, was it Teddy Greenberg on? He reminded me that Alonzo Ball's original diagnosis was 6 to 8 weeks, and now we're 60 to 80 weeks later, and he still has not been cleared. Has he been cleared by the medical staff?
No, he's putting up shots, but he's not running, he's not cutting, and was it John Greenberg, right, not Teddy
Greenberg? John Greenberg from The Athletic, yeah, we were talking about it, yeah. Yeah, 6 to 8 weeks has turned into basically 12 months, you know, so we don't have a timetable, right, Brian?
Nope, and that's what, you know, what is Joe Collier, everyone, A.K., Mark Eversley, they were asked last about it in the summer, and, you know, they got...
Summer?
Yeah, summer, and you know, basically, is Lonzo going to be ready? And oh yeah, we're hopeful. So they doubled down on continuity. They should have known better with their medical people. How, you know, whatever the deal was, and here we are in December, getting to the end of December, and he's not even on the horizon coming back. And Billy Donovan said it'll take weeks to get him up in basketball shape too, if in fact, you know, he's even close, which apparently he's not. So that's back to my argument about, you know, hey, what were you thinking in the summer when you're bringing back a team when this guy wasn't going to be available and you thought you're going to get to the second round of the playoffs?
Yeah, and how exactly did you, Billy Donovan, account for his loss with a training camp to prepare for it? It doesn't seem like much. It doesn't seem like they did anything in the front office or at the coaching level. Now, they might say some, you know, hands are tied and things like that in terms of salary cap and personnel, but you didn't really do much in either office, the coaching office or the front office, to address the loss of Lonzo Ball entering the season.
Hey, Matt, you know, a week or so ago, I told Jesse we were doing the show on a Saturday, and I just talked to an NBA executive, and we were talking about the Bulls, and he said, you know, I get Lonzo Ball's important, but this important? And then he said, when your three best players, your three stars are your worst defensive players, you know, where the hell are you going? And Jesse's like, well, Lonzo Ball is that important. I mean, again, they ain't Steph Curry. I mean, God bless Lonzo Ball and what he did for this team when he was healthy.
Yeah.
But I kept saying during the White Sox season when we get, oh, the injuries, once we get healthy, I'm like, I'm looking on this, Bryce Harper ain't on the injury list for the White Sox, right? I mean, keep it in perspective, right? I mean,
no, totally. And here's the thing. Look, what did they do these last two nights? So it is possible to play good defense if you actually try and play for each other. They can do it. They've done it at times this year. And these last two games are great evidence of it. So you're right. You lose Lonzo Ball, there's ways to make up for it. And they just haven't done it enough. And I put a lot of that on the coaches.
Yeah, and I'm with you and put it on the front office. If you once you knew he was not going to be out, maybe in the summer he thought he was going to be back for, if not training camp, the start of the season. Then it's obvious he's not. He's nowhere close, and he's having setbacks when he's on the underwater treadmill or the anti-gravity where he's not even putting weight on the thing and he's still feeling the effects of it. You have to have a plan B at some point. You can't just keep rolling the same group out there and expect a different result. And yet we're not allowed to ask AK, Mark Eversley, the brain trust and everyone's, celebrated front office last year because they're not guard packs. You can't get answers to those questions.
All right, well, you know what? I'm going to challenge Cap. Mr. Cap, Mr. Basketball knows everybody. Let's go, Cap. You're back after the new year. You get AK or Billy Donovan on. They need to answer some questions. Boom. Take that, Cap.
Take that. And when we come back, we'll get to Bears and Bills, preview the game with Courtney Cronin, and we'll get back to your calls. 312-332-3776. Cap and Jay Hood, it's Jesse and Brian here till 10 o'clock, ESPN 1000.
This is Chicago's home for sports.
This is Cap and Jay Hood on ESPN 1000.